Hit me one time. Ah, yeah. It's the Capital City Podcast. I'm your host, Capital J, alongside my main man,
DL Glass.
And tonight, we got a special guest in here. Goes by the name of Digital Diamonds.
Okay.
What's so special about this guy, Cap? Well, he has a company. You know, we always try to teach you something that's going to put you ahead of the game. And this man has a company that can help you. If you're a songwriter or a production, a producer or whatever, he can help you get your stuff on TV, in the commercials, movie soundtracks, etc. So without further ado, let's introduce this man. Digital Diamonds, give him a hand clap.
Yo, yo, yo.
Hey, what's good, man?
Man, everything going all good.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And I got to give a shout out to Fat Tommy. Shout out to Fat Tommy for making this happen. Hey, my man Digital. Now,
yo.
What we do here on the show, we always, when we have a guest on, the first thing, I gave him a little rundown of what you're doing. I'm going to let you explain that to the people. But first of all, let's talk about you and who you are and how you got into this music industry and how you went from where you started to what you're doing now. Tell us about your ride.
Well, I started off, I was a rapper and a producer, but I was more leaning toward developing the artist brand, and I had an independent distribution deal back in 2009 with Malico. Shout out to Tommy Couch. He gave me that opportunity. I didn't work directly with Mr. Couch, but we did have a mutual business relationship through Fat Tommy. Shout out to Fat Tommy again. And when I started that, I had worked that for about 2 years, but make a long story short, some unfortunate events happened, so ultimately the record label had to get dissolved. So then I jumped back in the game.
Hey, quick question. Yeah. With Malico, you said you had something going on with Malico. Now,
right.
As a rapper, were you actually doing hip-hop on Malico Records?
Well, Malico was the main distributor, what they called a parent label at the time. And I actually had a deal through another chapter with X Records, and they gave me my independent distribution deal. And my record label, which got dissolved, that was the main company that I owned. So we didn't sign a deal with Malico in terms of like an artist deal or anything like that. It was just an independent distribution deal through a subsidiary.
Gotcha. Where you from?
I'm from Peoria, Illinois, outside of Chicago, home of Richard Pryor.
Richard Pryor.
Ah, all right. Yeah. Chi-Town, stand up, Illinois, get Yo. Busy.
Mm-hmm. How was that distro deal back then?
You know, that was really kind of like the ad tender distribution deals. They kind of like really phased out a little bit after that because a lot of artists was predominantly working the streaming pretty much after that. I don't know exactly when those streaming platform established, but I think 2009 is when I had my deal. And I think around 2013, 12 maybe.
Right.
That they was kind of phasing out. People still do them. I ain't gonna say they don't do them, but they wasn't as popular as they was then.
Mm-hmm. Right. What'd your deal look like back then? That's what I was asking, because we hear stories about distro deals and how it set people up and stuff. I was just interested.
The distribution deal I had was a fair deal. It was a 50-50. Like, you really can't argue with 50-50. Some people, I know Master P and them had some, shout out to Master P, they had some really good splits on their distribution deals. Those were some of the earlier artists that had them. I think he had the 80-20s or the 85-15, something like that. But mine was 50-50 with the parent company, which was really fair. And that was on all ends, like the publishing and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was a fair deal.
Okay.
So coming out of that situation, you know, it didn't go the way that you had hoped it would. What was your next move?
I had stopped doing music and kind of started doing some family stuff, but you know, it's something real spiritual with music, man, that kind of materialize itself back in your life if you really got that music inside of your blood like that. So,
amen.
I ended up back doing it. You know, it just started coming back around, the resources and everything start coming back around. But I didn't really want to rap per se. I still do rap. I probably developed the artist brand a little bit later on, but I just wanted to do something new and different that wasn't nobody else doing. Cause it's a single file line into that rap game. It's a tad bit oversaturated in my personal opinion, but I don't like to deter people away from the sport. I mean, if you got what it takes, go for it. There's plenty of money to be made, but I just wanted to create something new that ain't nobody else doing. I wanted some originality. So, you know, I said, I'm just go ahead and jump into the sync licensing world.
Okay. Dope. So that was your next thing is sync licensing. So explain to us and our listeners what sync licensing is.
Sync licensing is the licensing of music into film, TV, advertising, and gaming.
Nice, nice.
Yeah. And that's more, it's actually a more lucrative business because, you know, one sync deal, like I said, it's a single file line dealing with just the conventional music industry because a lot of people trying to get in there and they just cramming that one line. And this is the alternative, but a lot of people don't know about it. I didn't even know about it. So I had to do a lot of due diligence. I got a lot of training involved in the industry to learn what I know now. But this right here is the way to go. It's no zero risk way to deal with your music. It's completely non-exclusive. That's for people who understand the non-exclusive protocols. I always tell people to do their own due diligence on sync licensing so they can know, like, on this platform that you guys provided me, I could probably give it to them in a nutshell, but they still want to do their own independent research so they can fully understand how it truly works.
Mm-hmm. Well, Cap J is I call him the hip hop historian / educator. And this podcast looks to educate our listeners. So I know, you know, it probably could be a long drawn out conversation, but we got time for you, you know, to kind of go a little bit more into detail about sync licensing. And because like me, I'm a consumer of hip hop. I consume hip hop. I listen to music all the time. And I hear the word phrases like sync licensing thrown around. I wouldn't even know where to start if I had something to submit to a company.
Right, right. So, with sync licensing, it's a 100% relationship based industry. You know, it's a lot different from the conventional industry where you can just set up a distro kit and upload your music. And, you know, that's pretty much you got a platform that's quote unquote there for distribution. It doesn't quite work that way in sync licensing. It's invite only. Mm-hmm. That's the only way you can get in. And right now we got the door open. But a lot of artists and producers, they got to understand like how to structure the track. So, but to answer your question directly, like to get in, what you would need to do is based off of the code emailing system. So you got to reach out to the library of your choice. You know, by dealing with me directly, I, of course we can, you know, speak, but if you didn't know me or somebody, you would send them a code email, and they even got a certain style of structure in the email so that they respond back to you.
Right. And the name of your company is the Hip Hop Library?
Yes, the Official Hip Hop Library. I just stamped that. I locked that in. We Beta Blue Digital. Beta Blue Digital is the name. We going under the moniker, the Official Hip Hop Library, because I seen that the lane was wide open for that.
Right, right. Well, my man DL does, he's actually a film guy. So I'm the music guy, and he's the film guy. So this is relevant to both of us today.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
Well, if you go ahead. Yeah, I've always wondered, how do you get in the game outside of the traditional avenues? We were just having a conversation before we started this thing. It'll probably be our topic next week about, what if you're a producer and, you don't have a rapper, you don't have a singer. What do you do with that music? Or, just other avenues to eat without doing the traditional everyday thing that everybody else is doing. So this is the perfect, you're here at the perfect time right now because we were just on this.
Yeah. So, it's perfect for producers. It's catered more so to producers than artists. But they are looking for artists, trending artists. It's from the music supervision community. They consider this one of the most gatekept communities because the music supervisors are the ones who pretty much place the music. So for producers, this is the route to go because they use plenty of this music. You would check reality shows, even commercials, ads. They throw cue bed or beds of music underneath a lot of the visual pictures, the moving media, and they just need those instrumentals, and they structure them. I had to be taught this myself, but you got to structure your beats at like 1:30. I'm a producer as well, but you structure your beats at 1:30, a minute 30. That's a standard. You don't go no more unless they request a little more, but they usually don't. Right at about 1:30, no fade out. I had to take all my fade outs. I had to redo like about 60-70% of my catalog and take the fade outs out. They want what they call a stinger on the end of the beat, where it just got the beat just ending like it's a bow, just done. Because it's just that's how they cut to the next scene. And that's usually most popular in reality shows. If you was to start paying more attention to them, you'll hear that bow, like an orchestral hit, and they go on to the next scene.
Right. Well, that's already important knowledge right there. You know what I'm saying? I used to always take note when I was watching the NFL Network a lot. They had tracks that sound very close to tracks you heard before, but varied enough that they don't have to pay the royalty fees for that particular track. But it's very close. So, you got producers out here whose whole gig is making something sound familiar, but not quite the thing. How far off does it have to be to avoid that? What do you have to change? Like, I'm asking you because you're in the game. If you're a producer, like let's say you heard Back That Ass Up by Juvenile, and they want something similar to that, how far off does it have to be? Like, what are the main things that you need to change to avoid legal problems?
If you recreate Back That Ass Up, the beat, there really isn't much legal ramifications. Now, when you come to the lyrics, if you was going to do the actual lyrics, that's considered a cover song, and they look for a lot of cover songs. When I get the briefs from different advertisers or film companies, they want cover songs. They want a Michael Jackson Beat It or a Juvie Back That Ass Up. So if you hit it right on the nose, it really don't matter because it falls underneath the reproductive rights.
Oh, okay.
So when you come into the reproductive rights, you in a safe lane, but I'm pretty sure that Baby and them got that copyrighted. You would have to just pay some royalties to them if the cover song does get placed, and that's just normally how it goes with the licensing process. There's really nothing against that, but they do so many cover songs, they do them a lot. So many people do them, especially like the Michael Jackson. They got millions of people doing his cover songs,
Right, right.
So that's how Pharrell and Robin Thicke into their legal.
And see, that was very close, but it definitely wasn't the same as the Marvin Gaye. So how did they get in so much trouble?
see, they was going into derivative rights, and that's from sampling. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot different. Like a cover song is a remake.
But they didn't really sample anything though.
That was Pharrell's argument, I think.
Yeah,
I remember that, but I don't know the exact how the whole case went, but I kind of remember that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, because
did they lose?
Yeah, they lost, and I can't figure out for the life of me.
Yeah, I was trying to
how they
out.
Lost that argument, because they didn't sample it. The song wasn't a remake. And, you know, it's like, how do you get rights to something that kind of sounds like it? You know, I don't understand. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, you gotta get it cleared if you're going to play with them samples. You really got to do it with the cover songs a lot of the times, too. You would go through the BMI, the ASCAP, or wherever it's, whoever got it, and get certain permissions, mostly for YouTube. But it's kind of the norm to do that. To make cover songs,
right?
So if you don't get them cleared, though, I wouldn't recommend anybody try to deal with some music that's already published without having it cleared and try to, you know, publish it again.
So you mentioned the relationships and the gatekeepers. So tell us about what kind of work that you had to do to build these relationships where you can make this happen. Because, you know, we're asking how you could do it yourself, but you have a company.
Mm-hmm.
So that people don't have to do all the legwork themselves. So that means you're out here building these relationships. Tell us about what is a day in your life making these relationships happen so you can make this company work.
Yeah, that's really an important advantage that you just mentioned right there. That's another advantage with dealing with Sync companies. We do all the legwork. We consider Sync agents. So we do all the legwork. All you got to do is submit the music. That's if they invite you in. Like I said, it's an invite only. But to answer your question, when we first started it, they didn't respect us at all because we just started. We came out of nowhere. And most of these companies is based in Los Angeles, you know, in the film capital, in the Hollywood area. So we coming out of the Midwest, like I just said. The actual company, the headquarters, is located in St. Louis, Missouri.
Oh, okay. So y'all spread out then.
Yeah, we straight in the Midwest. So, yeah, when we first started it, you know, a thousand no's. So it was 1,000 no's. But our advantage was that we branded it really strong, and it wasn't nothing else like it. So after a while, we kept networking. Like I said, the cold emailing system worked at all levels, even at, you know, our level. So we was cold emailing, reaching out to people. And then we just started, the door started to slowly open. We started to get partnerships. And we only been doing this about 18 months. And, you know, thus far, we already got 8 partnerships, and four of them with major publishers. So we really got access to like 1 million+ tracks.
Right, right. So for the person listening and they're saying cold emailing, what is that? Explain that for the listener.
Cold emailing, you know, emailing is one of the oldest and one of the most stable forms of messaging and networking there is in the digital world. You know, it was the first digital way of reaching out to each other before text messages and DM and inboxing. You know, the emailing system is like, you know, standing strong. So cold emailing is you got to just reach out to somebody that don't know you. And it's certain techniques. It's certain people who even sell master classes on how to structure a cold email. But a cold email is just reaching out to somebody that you don't know to try to solicit your services to them.
Oh, right. Like a cold call.
Cold, yes.
Gotcha. Like a cold call. Correct?
Gotcha. Yep. Okay. Yeah. So we're caught up.
Now, if I heard you correctly, earlier you talked about music supervisors. Those are part of your relationship building. Those people are key in your relationship building.
Yes. They're the key members. They're the main members. They're about 97% of how the music is getting placed into these into the companies that got advertising, gaming, movies, and whatnot. So So you want to build a team of those. We got two thus far, two good ones, but we also have the publishers, like I just mentioned, that we partnered with, who also got their network of supervisors who they let us in with. So we developing more and more, but we want personal relationships, and we want personal relationship with filmmakers. Like, we got to go out to Vegas, and we going to an expo to go reach out to some advertisers, because I'm going to be honest with you, the advertising money is where it's at. You know, the film money and the reality shows, they make money too. It's always good in the sports placements. Those are the most popular type of placements because they take a lot of that music, like I was saying, for the producers with hip hop beats or whatever. They take a lot of those sports placements, reality shows. But the advertisers, you know, they pay pretty big. You know, they usually got 5 and 6 bigger sync fees. And sync fees is the upfront payments.
Nice.
Okay.
You know, it's funny that we're talking to you right now, because today I Shazammed something and my TV was playing in the background, and it was a McDonald's commercial. And my Shazam picked up the McDonald's commercial, and it listed Tay Keith.
Really?
That's crazy, right?
Wow.
You said Tay Keith?
Yep, it listed Tay Keith
as the producer. Yeah, as I'm familiar.
As the producer of the music in the McDonald's commercial. And I never, you know, this totally by accident that this came up. So, you know, it ties right into what we're talking about right now. It just happened to me today.
Right.
Tay Keith made the beat behind the McDonald's commercial, and I didn't know.
Right.
You know, you would never know. Right. Never would have thought.
Right.
So this is the kind of stuff that you can help get people placed with, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he got a pretty hefty payment if that was a McDonald's commercial, because that was an ad, so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they ain't gonna pay. They ain't gonna pay. They rarely pay under $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, that's a nice hit.
Oh yeah, and then you also get the back end, the royalties as well. Depending on, and they usually play those commercials. They keep them running for a while. I know. I'm trying to think of the cat name. Those Super Bowl ads. You know, those Super Bowl ads. If a person get a Super Bowl ad, oh man, you talking $1 million upfront payment. Think fees.
It's crazy.
Nice. Hey, right. do you cover jingles too? You have people working on jingles?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it just depends on, like I said, the brief. And what a brief is that's the detailed description that the supervisor will give out. And they'll tell exactly, like, what kind of music they want, how they want it to sound, what genre and stuff like that. So if you get a brief, you know, they'll say a brief that'll say, you know, say jump, jump, jump in the verses or something like that. However they choose to have, they want it sounded. Sometimes people make them custom or go back into one of their tracks that they got in their catalog, and they'll rap they self or spit something they self and kind of like just have a beat or they voice on the beat, jump, 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 like a Nike commercial or something.
Right,
you know,
right.
It mix it all up.
So when they send those briefs out, do they just send it to you, or is this like they send it to a few different people and then pick from multiple submissions?
They do that. They'll send them to some bigger companies. But then if you got the relationships, like I said, we got a couple of good relationships. They'll send them directly to us as well. I prefer to deal with the ones that's just working directly with me, because it can tend to be a pool. They have a pool of people sending tracks, and you know, they can do a lottery pick sometimes. And I still will submit tracks to those, but like I say, I'm just developed. We only been doing this about 18 months, and we just want to develop a strong network of supervisors that we work directly with. And my team of producers can, you know, customize tracks to tailor to whatever projects they're working on. That's how I'm gonna ultimately have it done.
Right. Do any of the producers that you work with use samples in these tracks, or is it all original music?
Yeah, that's a really good question. If you're speaking on royalty free samples.
Since you dropped that in the game, right. I mean, both. We're trying to school the people right now. You know, royalty free and. What happens if you use something, you know, a sample from a more popular artist? Do you guys have stuff set up to clear those samples?
I'm gonna tell you 100% honestly, they completely frown on like samples from Publix. So if you take, like you was mentioning, the Marvin Gaye or some Aretha Franklin, you got some of that stuff in your track, you don't want to deal with that extent, because this is going to the billion-dollar brand, and the billion-dollar brand going to get the hit first.
Right.
So if they were to place that track with an Aretha Franklin sample and we didn't know.
Right.
You know, that ruins the relationship right there. They'll never, you know, talk to us again, and we don't want to lose the relationships. So, producers should not submit it with those type of samples. Now, royalty free is fair game, but I would not recommend you to just throw the raw samples in there. Just if you got a royalty free off of a splice or a lander, don't just throw it in there raw. Craft it a little bit, chop it, you know, reverse it, make it sound, you know.
Yeah, make it your
unique
own.
To you.
Right.
Correct. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, well, this is good info right here, man.
Right.
Yeah, anybody sitting behind the computer right now that makes beats and tracks, right, pay attention right now. You're getting $1 million worth of game.
Million.
You know?
So I have a question relating to this. So my experience with some showrunners is like levels to showrunners, and the ones who have access to the bigger networks, they may charge a fee to even represent you in your work. Does it work the same with you?
No. And that's a really good question. Also, this is 100% free, but they do have reputable companies who are charging subscription fees. And I'm going to tell you right now, they are scams. They are just scams, and they can be considered reputable companies. As a professional in this industry, I'm not going to mention these companies' names,
mm-hmm.
but that business model, it's just a scam, you know, and I'm qualified to speak on it, because when I jumped in, I was kind of working with them, shooting them some money, but they can't place any music and they can't guarantee placements like that. So nobody should ever pay anybody in sync licensing to listen to their music. They got a thing called pay to pitch, where you pitch the briefs that they got, and they may charge you a fee, whether it be $5 or $100. Do not pay that ever.
Right. So do you structure your stuff where you can, you know, if the producer eats, then you eat too?
That's the way this business works. That's right. The whole business model of the way it's worked from an honest standpoint. And it's a lot of different libraries, and we just run off of what's called the standard non-exclusive protocols. So that's just the way the standard non-exclusive libraries work. We can't make no money unless you make money.
Right. Well, that's what's up, man. Sound like you got a good thing going.
Yeah, we working, man. We working.
Yeah, man. I hope this thing works out, because I've been making beats for years. I got some stuff sitting around. I'm going to send you some stuff.
Right.
Is that, you know, as a producer, every time I'm producing, I'm sitting there by myself. And when I'm making a beat, instead of making it simply for a rapper to rap on or whatever, I'm always thinking like theatrical.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So I want, you know, every track I make is already thinking theatrical, and I want it to be a standalone track, whether somebody gets on it to rap or sing or not. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're gonna have to link up.
Yeah. That's what, but also, like, that was important too, because I used to make tracks for artists. The sync beat, I didn't go into detail, but I mentioned sit them at 1:30, no fade outs, but you want to have dynamics in the sync beat. Orchestral hits is really popular. Like, you can't go wrong just throwing an orchestral hit. Like a boom, you know, all through the track. You know what I'm saying? It's some good dynamics, and you want to bust it up real good. You know, that's how they want it, you know, in terms of presenting it for any motion pictures or whatever. They kind of want the beat to kind of just move around a little bit. You know, even switch up the top line melody a little bit. It just do some stuff. And that 1:30, you want the beat to just do some things and have some dynamics in it. So that's important to know too.
Right, and some feeling.
And so, the visual aspect has changed too, that makes that so much more important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because everything is an experience, and the experience is heightened nowadays with 4K and all this, you know, high quality visuals.
Right. That's what you want to do, is capture that experience and emotion and your beat and just kind of, but see what you do. Like I tell them, just study commercials and stuff and look at them reality shows. After I got involved in it, then I start checking out beats.
You make you pay attention.
They've been in my face the whole time. Yeah, they've been in my face the whole time. I would overlook them just looking at the commercial. But the beat is underneath it on the bed playing. But, yeah, just check them out, and you can, you know, kind of structure them off of that.
I got a question, you know, because I guess hindsight is often better. Now that you have this knowledge, what is one, I guess, beat or one scene that you've seen in a movie or a show that you didn't know that it drew you in that much more until you had the knowledge that you have now?
You know, I'm also a student at Los Angeles Film School. Shout out to the LA Film School alumni.
Oh, dope.
I went all the way back to get my Bachelor's of Science in music production. Even though I had already been doing it for 20 years, I just wanted some credibility and I wanted to know everything. I like to be the best. But, to answer your question, is they in my class, they played a scene from Batman, from the original Batman movie.
Okay.
And in that scene, I'm trying to remember the scene. But in the scene, they had the music playing. And I kind of remember the scene, but I was just realizing like how captivated I was into the scene because of the music, because they did a sample clip where they took the music out of the scene. And it was just like, just a dry scene. But with the music in there,
it changed everything.
It showed me, it changed everything. Like, it just like gave it about a 60% more of a captivating moment, you know?
Right, right. And, if you go back and watch some old movies from the 70s, man. You'll hear Quincy Jones and Herbie Hancock did some incredible work.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching Death Wish, Charles Bronson, the other day.
Yes.
And I heard, you know, I'm watching the scene. You know, he's walking back to his apartment, and they played this music. I was like, oh, that's dope. And then I heard a sample that I recognized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was like, oh, that's Les Nubians, Makita. I was like, oh, then I looked up the soundtrack. I was like, oh, Herbie Hancock. No wonder. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But it's like, so cats, like, you do have big time producers out here.
Mm-hmm.
Just like I accidentally found out Tay Keith is doing this McDonald's music. And I accidentally found out that Herbie Hancock was responsible for the Death Wish soundtrack. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
Right. So this has been going on for a long time.
That, I just found out, you mentioned Quincy Jones. I didn't know Quincy Jones did the
Sanford and Son.
Sanford and Son.
Yes. Right.
Yeah, I didn't know that, man. They said he's from Burner. Yeah, he's taking a bang on this day, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, Quincy Jones is a monster, man.
The show be the same if it wasn't for that?
Right. That,
you know,
that intro to Sanford and Son, like, hey, man.
It probably made it easier
just
to write.
Just as important as the rest of the show. Because when you think Sanford and Son, first thing pops in your head.
Right. And it is as important as the musical aspect. Because the music director of a film, in my opinion, is just as important as the director of photography. Because if the music's not right for the scene, it takes away from that. And that's something that I was always intrigued with, the musical aspect of it. And sometimes it makes me wonder, like, why aren't soundtracks as important as they were back in the day? And I hate to sound old by saying back in the day, but, you know, when the movie came out, sometimes the soundtrack lined up the movie release.
You know, hey, now we getting into now you're a part of our podcast right now. We're gonna talk to you a little bit.
Yes, sir.
Like, being in this game, think about the question that he just asked. Now we're talking to you, a person that does sync for the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think we went from soundtrack being important to people not really caring anymore?
In my personal opinion, man, I think it went away with CDs, man. Because, I mean, that's just, if I'm going to really just give it an answer off the top of my head, because I remember soundtrack, because I remember one of the bangingest soundtracks, a couple of them, Menace to Society, you know, they had a bad soundtrack.
Dead President.
And, it was another, The Show. I don't know if y'all remember that.
Yeah, the show. Absolutely. Yeah, The Show was incredible.
Yes, sir.
But you know something?
Man, they had it.
That era of soundtracks was a little bit different from the previous era of soundtracks.
Mm-hmm.
Where, okay, like let's take James Brown Black Caesar soundtrack.
Mm.
It's all James Brown. Mm-hmm. Everything on the soundtrack you heard in the movie somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all one artist. Isaac Hayes,
mm-hmm.
Shaft soundtrack. Whole soundtrack is music that you heard in the movie.
Right.
Then we reached this point where there were songs on the soundtrack and some of them didn't make the cut for the movie.
Right.
But you still have a soundtrack and it's all various artists.
Yeah.
You know, like that was a major change, having various artists soundtracks
mm-hmm.
versus one person do the entire soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we watered it down a little bit by having various artists. Because, you know, you take Quincy Jones, James Brown, Isaac Hayes, Herbie Hancock. These are masterful
mm-hmm.
producers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're riding with you through the movie, taking you through every emotion.
Right.
So you now get various artists.
You're going to make me do some research because I got to research scoring a film.
Yeah. It's like it used to be more score.
Right.
Rather than various artists.
Mm-hmm.
So and scores don't get released like they used to, because you can have a movie now and once, like, I've seen movies where they put out the score and a separate soundtrack with various artists.
Right.
So and you can do all that, can't you? You can license everything, right?
Oh yeah, that's what we do.
One stop shop.
Yeah, one stop. That's exactly what it is. It's a one stop shop, and that's what the music supervisors want. They want that one stop, easy clear, what they call it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you specialize in hip hop, though.
I specialize in hip hop. You know, just because, like I mentioned, my history with hip hop. And, you know, hip-hop really been detrimental to me. So, I mean, I couldn't, like, overthrow the founding forefathers of hip-hop, but I needed to own a piece of it.
You know, because
I was influenced by it, you know. And like I said, the record label world is kind of, like, loaded up right now. So I just wanted to create my own lane. So I said I'm going to just coin the official hip-hop library, and we're going to run with it. We're going to brand it, and here we are.
It's perfect timing, man. Perfect timing for that branding, because you know, hip hop is the language that everybody's speaking now.
Right.
You know, you take the words off of most songs, even pop, R&B. It's hip hop tracks.
Right.
Underneath.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I was going to ask. Like, could you speak to if there were challenges? And I know you're still new at this. But I'm pretty sure you probably may have seen or may have been able to identify where hip hop has gotten you places where, or hip hop has stopped you from being a place.
Yeah, what are some of the challenges that you face, you know, being under the umbrella of hip hop?
Right. If you face that.
Well, yeah and no, because the brand itself is ran by actual, you know, person who looked hip hop. You know, it's other hip hop companies, but I did make the choice to overthrow them, the other hip hop sync companies, because
right on.
You know, they ain't hip hop. You know, I'm hip hop. You know what I'm saying? So
right,
that's why I hurried up and branded. Yeah, I own that, the official hip hop library, but in terms of you know, issue or challenges. Like I said, when I started, you know, they didn't really understand how hard we was going to go, a lot of folks, because we did get like 100 no's, you know, because they like hip hop and, you know, they frown up their face and, you know, all these hip hop. I don't even want to throw. I hate to try to throw race involved. I try to leave that out of it. But you know, it was just people was just looking at us a certain way because it's hip hop, and they were looking at it like that, trying to brush it off and frown upon it. But mm-hmm. we just stayed consistent and stayed in their face, and we kept that brand going. And then you know, the power of social media is really undeniable. So, and we knew how to do a lot of big boy branding, like make digital videos, and we would just flood. It was so unconventional the way that we was just flooding videos. We put the track on these digital videos that we would make and just flood them all over, just all over the place. And producers coming to reach out to us left and right. Then people start responding to the cold emails. It just start picking up, but it was just like kind of, I compared the way that we was sending out those digital videos to like the old school way, how would people would promote concerts and leave that little card on people's windows all over the place. And now you see this concert, these cars all laying in the streets and everywhere.
Right.
That's how we had the videos just everywhere. And mostly we was posting them on LinkedIn, and LinkedIn really ain't the spot for that. You know, LinkedIn, but that's where the music supervisors.
That's where they live. At. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's their world. And we would just bombard them, and it was just so unconventional. But next thing you know, I look up, they start copying off of them. They start making videos.
Yeah, that means you're doing it right.
That's how I knew I was on to something. I'm like, oh, y'all copying, y'all making videos. Wasn't nobody doing it before we were.
Now, to talk about your emailing, how'd you build that list? And not just, I guess, for your relationships with the other companies, with the music supervisors, but for the artists and things like that, how did you build a list? And, like, how do you make sure that your email is not just a spam email? Because and the reason why I ask that, because I'm not really in tune with social media as much as I used to be. But since we've launched this podcast and the success from the podcast, I get all kinds of emails from this company saying they can help me do this or they can help me do that. Like, how does your company separate from, you know, like I said, the spam?
Yeah. I wouldn't recommend anybody, if they have a company of any sort, to have a Gmail. You know, we had the info at Beta Blue Digital. So we structured the email strong. And then at the bottom, it was stamped with the official structure also, with the company name, the address. We had some disclaimers at the bottom, and that's our standard structure of email, so it was really corporate looking.
Right.
So we had the whole corporate setup with the email. And then the subject line is really important, because that's what lures them in. Mm-hmm. And we just set it up like that, and we was getting responses. Now, we got way more no's than we did get responses, so I'm going to be clear. It was probably 80 to 10.
Yeah, it's a numbers game.
Mm-hmm.
It's a numbers game. Yeah, it is.
That 10 is a success, though, man.
right.
It is.
Yeah.
Hey. Yeah.
So if you're like everybody else in the business, you remember the first time you got that placement. What was it? What was the first, you know, the first yes?
Well, the placements, all we started doing was the partnerships. Once they linked us in with the partnerships, that's where everything started turning around. Because what we have now is it's a company that we just linked up called So Stereo. And they building, you know, us an interactive playlist. Because to even get direct licensing off of your website, the playlist can run you, you know, close to $15,000. But So Stereo, shout out to my boy Owen. He was so intrigued by what we were doing. They, you know, helped us build the direct player, and he'd been pitching our music, and I believe he got some placements going on, because we just spoke with him about a week ago. But we still waiting, because the website's still under construction. We waiting on the player to get added to the website. But about a week ago, he was telling me something, because he's been doing a lot of pitching, and he's an advertising liaison. Like I say, I'm going from mostly ads. I still deal with the sports placements and everything, but we in the process, like I say, of loading up that network so that we can just, you know, give them the music and they just lock it in like that.
Right. So right now, the hip-hop library is an actual library that if somebody came to you, they could actually just go through and listen to a bunch of stuff and decide what they want.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to have direct licensing features. We should be done. I can't give you an exact time, but we're going to send around. We're going to make a big announcement once the website is 100% complete. Like, we got an active website. But we want people to have direct licensing straight off of there. And they can just license directly from there. And it's going to be interactive. And then AI coming out. You know, AI actually got a lot of people nervous, a lot of producers nervous, because I think they said Red Lobster just placed their first AI song. Uh-oh. For their Cheddar Baked Biscuit.
And who is AI signed to?
AI just a robot. They out too.
Yeah, that is something to think about in today's environment, considering that you can just say, hey, AI, I need music for a commercial by Delicious Biscuit.
Right.
And you know the computer will generate anything for you and
write my verse with Sexy Red.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so I can imagine that's gonna be an obstacle to overcome in the future, man. That's definitely gonna be something that to keep an eye on, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy you were talking about how important these relationships are, because I read an article a couple weeks ago and I sent it to Cap J about the machine that pushed Sexy Red to her stardom. And just reading the caption, the novice would have thought that it was actually a machine that they spent $1 billion, because that's what the headline said.
The billion dollar machine. Right.
But the billion dollar machine was all these relationships. Like I said, we look to educate our people. And I think that's very important when you're looking for other avenues or how to get your music out there. Or just how to be a part of the industry is building relationships. Like, what early skills gave you, I mean, what early lessons gave you the skills to build those relationships?
Well, when I had my independent distribution deal, I learned that really early on, because, you know, I work with Project Pat. Shouts out to Project Pat. I work with Crucial Conflict. Shouts out to Crucial Conflict. Hey. I did a video with Young Bloods, J-Bo from the Young Bloods. We did a track together. Shout out to J-Bo. Mm-hmm. That's how I learned early on, because when I was just networking, when I started the label, I was again coming from a place where nobody didn't know me. And then shout out to Fat Tommy. Tommy was mentoring me and showing me, hey, you got to do it this way. You got to build a story, because I was just like, you know, I was a little bit younger then, in my 20s, and I'm just like, come on, I'm finna rap. I'm ready to rap. Let's do it. What I got to do, you know, I'm just spending money, because I had independent distribution deal, and the key word is independent. Mm-hmm. So I'm spending money out of my pocket. And so,
yeah, you got a good mentor. That's how I started. Fat Tommy understands relationships.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's coming from, especially as a record promoter back in the day, you know, I could say that dealing with him from the other side, I could tell that he understood relationships and how to cultivate them to get done what he needed to get done.
Mm-hmm.
And he was good at that. So, yeah, you had a good mentor.
Yeah, he showed me early on. He showed me a lot. And it was built, even my relationship with him still to this day, I think we going on about 15, 20 years, somewhere around there. And I kept, there's not a single relationship or a bridge that I didn't burn, because I just kept them all solid. J-Bo, King Floaty. I ain't talked to J-Bo in a while, but his partner King Floaty was kind of the one who liaisoned that movement. We had did a track together as well. He's part of the Attic Crew. That's CeeLo cousin. I got a good relationship with him down in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
I got a few relationships, but that's the most important part. In keeping them relationships, you just got to make sure you're a sound-minded, sound-hearted person, you know, and the relationships is key. That's what's really going to take you in either sync or the conventional music industry. That's going to take you all the way to the top, because you can have one good relationship with one good person that just leads to a whole network of people if you do it right.
Right.
True. True that. True that. And now we got a relationship with you and you got a relationship with us.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Add a couple of more people to your Rolodex.
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah. We're going to talk. We're going to talk. My boy said he's doing films. I was interested in that.
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, I got one question, and I'll be honest, depending on your answer, this might get edited out. It might stay in. So, like, what for you? Starting your company, just like a ballpark figure, like where are you as far as investment goes?
Let's see. I'm going to answer this correctly.
Okay.
But hold it, if I could jump in, I know we're recording, so we might have to edit it out. But it's hard to quantify time, energy, and educational resources, because you have to really account for the time at LA Film School. You really have to account for the time that you study. And then the least of it is the money. I mean, I know people don't think the least of it, but the least of this is the amount of money, because the work, you gotta, when you give them the number, make sure you quantify your time.
Your time is money.
To educate yourself, yeah. Because a lot of people just throw the number out. Well, I put up 100 racks. Well, yeah, but you did more than that because you went to LA Film School for 4 years to get a degree. That cost you time and money right there. So that's all. I just wanted to add that to my – go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, right, that was right, Fat right. Tommy with his 2 cents. Y'all got it up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but you're right, though. If we're going to, you know, throw that element in But before I answer, you know, I want to say the importance of even having digital businesses as opposed, you know, digital businesses is really the wave. And I would strongly urge people to even like just structure more businesses online as opposed to like physical locations and things like that. You know, even if you got a physical location, try to get the online counterpart, because it takes away a lot of the overhead, you know, costs and stuff you would pay. So, with that being said, man, you know what? I really developed so many skills on my own. I'm going to be honest. I went hard, like I told you, with the video editing, my own production. Mm-hmm. But I did enroll in college. And I would say maybe college may be the most where I'm coming up out of.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to even really give it a solid number. I have to sit here and think, and I don't want to waste y'all time.
Well, I'll tell you why I asked that number. Question. The reason why I asked that question was for personal reasons, because, you know, I recognize that you're a new, quote-unquote, startup. And the goal of the startup is to expand the brand or the business or sell off the business. Me being in this podcasting game with Cap J now 4 years, almost 100 episodes, like we always looking, it's not just about the listeners being educated on ways to make money in this industry outside of what we're used to. We want to know for ourselves too. And that's part of the reason why I was asking. And that's why I was being funny when I said I might edit this part out. Because if you had said that we started this business by doing this, this, and this, and it only costs so many dollars, and that number might be low, I might be like, I don't want the listeners to know this, because I want us to be the pioneers of this to help him on the, you know what I'm saying, where we are in North Carolina. So it was strictly personal that I asked the question. It wasn't for you to, you know, and granted, for us to even be in the space that we're in now, it has taken years of experience and blood, sweat, and tears to get to this point. Like, I couldn't give you a dollar amount myself for what I do, but I just wanted to know.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to put a dollar amount. And then you got to look at what's considered money.
Right.
Because, like, if I might have spent $25,000, you know, within the course of a 6-month period, that, and depending on whatever I got, because I deal with real estate on the side also, so mm-hmm. it don't matter, because it's just like I'm pushing the brand. I be counting the accomplishments, so I lose track of the money a lot of the time.
I understand.
So it's hard, and I need it. And actually, I was just started tallying up, because we finna do a lot of traveling and networking this year right here. We going real public with the brand. Mm-hmm. So I just started a small tally, keeping track of everything, like costs, the expenses of travel and stuff like that. But all people really need to do is know how to in-house everything. Just in-house everything. Learn how to be your own video editor for y'all podcasts and your audio recorders, and just do everything in-house. Less outsourcing. That's what we had practiced, just less outsourcing.
Yeah, one-stop shop.
Right.
One stop right here in the house. Mm-hmm.
Hey, that's what's up, man.
And just build that house up.
Yeah. Yeah. But man, you gave it, like I said, you gave us a whole lot of info. Anybody paying attention right now, man, you know, you can't say you didn't learn anything today.
Right. Can't say that.
You can't say that.
You can't say that.
Can't say that. Hey, how would somebody get in touch with you if they're sitting listening to this right now and they say, you know what, this is the avenue I want to go. I want my music on television. How do they get in contact with you, and how do they get the ball rolling to get your services?
Beta Blue Digital is the name of the company. You can go follow us on all platforms. We're giving everybody an all-exclusive inside access while we building this whole thing. Y'all can just watch the movement. Y'all can, you know, DM me on any of those platforms, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We on all of them. We ain't active on all of them, but you can still hit the inboxes on any one of them, or you can just email. Like I say, the email system is the main thread in this industry, and that's my email. You can email me directly, Barry@betablue.com. That's Barry@betablue.com. And the overall standard email is info@betablue.com. But yeah, social media anyway. I mean, I'm accessible.
Word. I noticed it says that this company is founded by a team of music industry veterans. Well, do you have partners?
I'm the team.
Ah, my man. I like the way you worded that thing.
I mean, I got vast resources at my hand. So, you know, it got shots out Fat Tommy on the line. Me and him just got through doing some work. You know, I got a team. I ain't even really tapped into all my resources yet. Like, I'm literally just going public this year right here. So. And I'm giving everybody inside access. We're doing something new with that. In the world of content, you know, content is king now. So we said we're going to have a little fun with this thing. You know, let everybody see us build something like this.
Hey, that's what's up, man. Well, I hope everything works out, and I hope this thing goes straight to the moon.
Right. Have you done a lot of these interviews?
Yeah. Y'all in the early stages with me. I think this is about my fourth one.
God damn it, we here.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Well,
yeah, y'all in the
don't forget
y'all in
us,
the top
man.
Five,
don't forget us.
Yeah, well, we're gonna keep pushing, man. We're gonna keep pushing. We've had a few producers as guests, and you know, a couple of them have talked about having their music placed in in film and television commercials, this or that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this time
they don't know how. They don't know where to go.
Yeah. They didn't really explain how they, you know, how that happened. And for them, well, actually, it was relationships. Mm-hmm. They knew somebody who knew somebody, and were able to get this, you know, get something done. But after that, you know, I'm, you know, we're gonna turn some people on to your services. It's very important.
Yeah, but I'm gonna also mention before we go, the older libraries are more, they have the relationships. They locked in, you know, they got the monolith library, which is called APM. That's the big dog. They way harder to get into. But you know, these guys get tons of placements because this is just a relationship-based industry. Mm-hmm. Us branding it, we just taking it to the next level. You know, we brand spanking new. We like infants in this industry. You know, and it's a really, I respect everybody in this industry because these are really great people. I think this is where the last of the great people is left, that is in Sync License, and everybody's polite, you know, really good people, and they just know how to talk to each other with respect and everything. But, you know, it's a list of libraries, music directed, and I'm speaking, you know, in all honesty, for producers who really want to hustle in this business, you want to submit to 10 to 15 different non-exclusive libraries. That's the whole hustle, because the word non-exclusive means you can have your tracks over here, 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 and they good. And they more likely to get placed. And then you can get that residual income rolling.
Right, right.
I like that word.
Yeah, yeah.
Residual.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody likes residual. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Shoot, man, this is, hey, this is, like, for me, this is probably the most beneficial.
Yeah.
The most beneficial interview we've done. You know, I've talked to a whole bunch of people, but they've all been, you know, it's all been down a lane that I've walked. Mm-hmm. I haven't walked this lane, so I'm learning as you're speaking. And, you know, we appreciate you coming on, man. And I would say that, you know, you talk about those bigger people who already have the relationships. You will be that one day.
Mm-hmm.
And
we hit a dominate. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know I can, I just got a feeling,
mm-hmm.
you know, that this thing's going to take off and you'll be that one day. So I'm claiming it right now on the show.
Right.
The Hip Hop Library is going to be the place to go.
And he's had the home base in St. Louis, Missouri. So he already got a different swag about him.
Midwest swag.
Yeah, yes, sir. That Midwest. That's what it is.
Yes, sir.
Hey, well, man, we appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah, man. It's
sure enough.
Dope, man, thank you. Thank you for having me, man. Thank you so much for having me, man. I really appreciate this exposure and let me be on your platform. So thank you. Salute.
No, we appreciate you for coming on, man, because like I said, we aim to educate, and this is, like I said, this is huge. This is the kind of information that I've always wanted to know. And, you know, you can watch videos all day. It's not going to teach you how to get there. You know, you need to be listening to somebody who's doing it. So.
Yeah, but still do your due diligence. You want to study, because I probably ain't cover everything, but you definitely do your due diligence and YouTube it, and they got some good info as well.
Well, tell me this, but before we get out of here, is there anything that we haven't covered that you would like people to know?
We've been going for a while. I think I tried to cover pretty much most of the basics. Because that's just really, it's not that complex. I don't want people to even think it's that complex either. So, yeah, I just wanted, you're more susceptible to getting accepted if you just, you know, follow most of the things that I told you, get accepted into those libraries and start the hustle. But you want the whole hustle is just built off of just sending them to all those non-exclusive libraries, mine and the others that will accept you. So other than that, it's just a hustle.
Indeed. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Digital Diamonds from Beta Blue Digital, the official hip hop music library.
Yes, sir.
Look it up. Yes, sir. Trying to get a foot in the game. Look it up right now.
Yes, sir.
He gave you the, give him the email one more time.
That's info@betablue.com. You can follow us on all platforms, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. My personal email is Barry, Barey, @betabluedigital.com. Shoot me an email and let's work.
Indeed. Hey, with that being said, we're only giving out this game for a little while. After a while, we're going to have to start charging y'all.
Yeah. Like them Apple subscriptions.
You better get in now.
Absolutely. Once we hit 100, it's over. And we real close right now. Real close.
What y'all stream? Y'all live streaming is a thing?
Nah. No, we don't live stream. We record and drop episodes every week.
every Wednesday.
Yep. Oh, okay, I'm gonna tap in once we get off this call. I'm gonna tap in.
Yeah, we're on all streaming platforms, man. Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon, any place that you can get a podcast, we're there. Capital City Podcast.
With capital J.
Okay.
Yep. Alongside my main man,
DL Glass.